And hello everyone and welcome to the Closer Look with Kate Thomas and Gus Hennenberg. And we are into our show right now here at, what is it, 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. here on the East Coast. Yeah, I understand that we have a lot of people, new people listening in. I'm really very tickled about that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first of all, I'd like to say happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you, Gus Hennenberg. Happy birthday to you. Da-da-da-da.
Now tell the world how old I am.
Tell the world how old you are?
I'm not sure.
Well, you're over 60. Let's put it that way, okay? But happy birthday. How do you feel today? Today's birthday.
You could try over 70.
Yeah, over 70. Okay, that's good.
You can try over 80. That works too.
That's good too. Listen, you know the thing? Guess what? This is the, you had to remind me of this. This is the 50th anniversary of the Brown versus the Board.
Segregated schools, public schools, are illegal. Whether it's Alabama, or Michigan, or Maryland, everywhere. And one of the, and an effectively desegregated, term doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But I raised this question with them, minority folk and non-minority folk. Suppose over the last 30 or 40 years you had gone to school. If you were black, you would have been an all-black school.
Yeah.
If you were white, you'd be in a you have not had the opportunity to go to school with people different from you.
Yes.
Elementary school, high school, middle school, college, and so on. And I suspect if you would take that a bit further and say, what impact would it have had on America if tens of thousands of students, some black, some white, had never been able to go to school with each other? Teachers who are black and white.
We never had
no mixture at all. Because it happened so long ago, we take it absolutely for granted. But I'm just saying, think for a minute about what it would be like if in your school along the way it had been totally segregated.
Well, in other parts of the country also.
It's happening all over America.
Elizabeth, New Jersey is not part of America. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
It wasn't then, but it is now.
That is not nice at all. But anyway, you know, this is really momentous because that happened in the 1960 or was it 68 or around 67? I know the disorder in Newark was like 1967, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So looking at the schools now versus then, and we have a lot to talk about in education because there is a problem of unions. There's a big thing going on in Newark now. You know, we just have a new, do we have a new superintendent? As a matter of fact, I think she's going to be decided on. This is the person that I think the mayor, Cory Booker, brought in, and also Chris Christie, and the new superintendent, no, commissioner of education, Chris is a cert, I think, brought her in, Amy, somebody from New York. So,
well, that's, you know, correct. That's not remotely related to the issue of what would have happened if the court, U.S. Supreme Court, had not forced the desegregation of public schools in America. If they hadn't done it, the schools in Newark would have been all white. There would have been no integration. Now, think through, and I'm saying this to our audience. Think through as you grew up, elementary school, high school, college, everybody had been the same color. Just think what impact that would have had on your view of light in America
yeah.
today.
It would be probably a very dim view in a very long form, but not to be subjected, not, maybe subjected is not the word I want, but not to be associated with people from different backgrounds, from different colors. That's very attractive to me. A diverse school population is very attractive because then you find out so many different things about so many different people coming from so many different colors. You know, from so many different countries, Robin. We have a phone ringing that we're trying to adjust things to right now.
People are calling in already.
Oh, people are calling in already. My goodness, yes, and we do. Should we give out that number or people have that number already? Shall we take a call at all or what? The number is, I don't know. It's what? 347. Wait one sec. We have people online. I understand they want to get it on this. This is Kay Thompson. I'm Kay Thompson, and all right, let me write this down. 347-202-0164. That's the number that we can be reached. That's 347-202-0164. Is that correct? So if you want to call in, we are taking callers, and I think that's why things are just a little bit out of order right now. We're trying to make it so that we do get the callers in. But we're talking about the 50th anniversary of the desegregation legislation that integrated the schools in the United States of America because separate but equal schools just did not really exist. Am I right?
Well, they were separate. I would never claim they were equal. And I had sort of an unusual experience. I went to school. I was born in Alabama. Long before the Supreme Court decision. And I have thought in recent days, as we were approaching this anniversary, what my life would have been, how different it would have been if all of my education, elementary, high school, and so on, had been in all one race environments.
But it was to a certain point, you know, when you were in school, up to what?
It was only up to a point. My elementary... Black college.
Which college, by the way?
Hampton University.
Yes.
but they were white students
yeah.
there. So, because the decision had been rendered by that time. But I guess what I'm suggesting, and I think most people have never done this, think back, had you gone to totally racially segregated schools all of your life, would your life have been the same?
Mm-hmm.
Would your outlook, would your perceptions been the same?
Okay, now let me ask you this while we ponder that. For instance, now you had come from the South and you came to New York
And you were right in Harlem, I understand, when you entered your first year of high school. Is that it?
No, I went to four high schools.
Four high schools, okay.
My first year of high school.
You needed that much high school?
Was in Durham, North Carolina. All black school. My second year of high school was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
All black high school. My third year of high school was in New York. My family.
Board of Newark?
Well, that's who's going to be living there have not yet moved in. But on the grounds of these brand new houses will be, I'm not quite sure what they're calling it, a first aid center.
Mm-hmm.
It has become very clear to people, if you concentrate large numbers of people in a small geographic area, among the things you've got to have is medical service.
Yeah.
So it has become the norm now that when you build public housing or private housing, large numbers, there better be immediate access to a first aid clinic or some medical capacity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've done in Newark.
I see. And this is something new. This is a new thrust in public housing, bringing in medical services right on the premises.
It's not new.
It's not new.
It's new in Newark.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not new.
Mm-hmm. In reading about this article that, I was talking about in Camden, New Jersey, it says that a new clinic is going to deliver health care, in a very... and in a very, not elaborate way, but which was to open in late April, is located in Northgate 2, a public housing apartment building, where more than 300 low-income residents live. The location was chosen after research showing that many residents use the hospital emergency room instead of a primary care physician for their medical needs.
And that was true all over the country.
All over the country. Uh-huh.
Something happens to us, we go to the emergency room.
Uh-huh.
And often get treated in the emergency room.
Yeah.
And in public housing, which is different from other housing in that you've got large concentrations of low-income families who live in public housing.
Mm-hmm.
And putting a first aid or infirmary or whatever you want to call it.
Makes sense.
Physically on the ground. So mm-hmm. Makes all the sense in the world.
And I understand that's the Millennium Housing in South Ward in Newark also. Along with the health clinic, they have several units for handicapped people, physically challenged people.
That is correct.
Yeah, I was very impressed when we were down there to see that, on the premises. I'm really glad to hear that. Also, in talking about public housing, another thing that's happening now with older people are now hiring personal trainers. Did you know that?
Well, I'm not an older people, so I don't know anything about that.
But anyway.
I mean, you would know something about that, but I don't.
Teaching them. But anyway, this might be a new career choice for a lot of people, to become personal trainers. And, for instance, people who are taking classes in various physical activities like dancing, like Zumba class, whatever they're called. Fantastic. So that might be a new way to start a job. A lot of our kids can dance, even if they have not had dance training. This is not to say that we dance normally. I think we do have a certain kind of different rhythm that is unique to African Americans, which I'm very proud of. And having been one of the co-founders of the Thompson Dance Studio in Newark, I can sort of attest to this. But a lot of things are going on that we really want to talk about. Also, did you know that there's recently introduced legislation to give consumers access to prescription drugs from other countries? That's really very important, because the fact that so many people in dealing with their drugs and their prescription, have to pay a whole lot of extra money, So I don't know. Maybe we should give out the number in case people want to call in and talk. By the way, I want to say this to everyone, that next week we are going to be talking to Dr. Clement Price, who's the director of the Black Studies Department of Rutgers University. And we're going to be finding out what's going on with their, a lot of different programs, because he's been having a fine series. What is it, Marion Wright? Marion Wright Thompson series over there at Rutgers?
Correct. He has sponsored every year a series of lectures called the Marion Wright Thompson Lecture Series at Rutgers. These are held on weekends. And if you go to them, you will find the auditoriums packed.
Packed, absolutely.
One other observation is that among the things that people in Newark and around Newark may not be aware of, many of them may not be aware of, there are five colleges and universities physically located in downtown Newark. Now, that's contrary to the major public perception about what Newark is and has. But you've got Rutgers University, New Jersey Institute of Technology, the University of Medicine and Industry, Seton Hall Law School, Rutgers Law School, all right in the middle of downtown New Jersey.
Yeah, Berkeley's down there also.
There are two places like that.
Okay. So let me hold, let's hold the phone for just a minute. We have a caller calling in, so let's take this call. Yes, you're on the air. Hello? Show. Are you there? If not, we will come back to you. The number for you to call is, what is that number again?
323-679-0906.
If someone has Skype, that number is 347-202-0164. So that's the Skype. That's a Skype call-in number. Okay. And we will be taking these calls as we go along, talking about so many different things. We are also going to be talking, and I think I mentioned it to you, I was talking to Sahima Daughtry Martin today. And she's a young lady who is a, you know, a friend, and she is a very interesting story because she was one of the only people, and this is a, an unfortunate story, and she will tell you that, who was in a Philippine, a jail in the Philippines. She was jailed because she was involved with the drug, you know, trade. And she, we will hear her story. She was in, I think, the jail in the Philippines for about 8 years. And finally she was able to come out, and she realizes that she has a story to tell, you know, younger people. So I can't wait to talk to Sahima, because she does have a very interesting story, and about how she was treated, and also how she was also not treated by the government. But anyway, we will get to that. As a matter of fact, the person who helped her in her, you know, being released from that prison was Congressman Donald Payne, as a matter of fact. So we're going to be talking to him. By the way, guess who I was talking to just yesterday? You're supposed to say that more enthusiastically.
Who were you talking to yesterday?
Melvin Van Peebles. You know, we did the interview with him when we went into New York with Eusebio Washington, our production company that we're so proud that they're letting us work with them, work for them. Slave drivers. And, you know, met Melvin, who is an absolutely fascinating, fascinating person. We were able to do some, have an interview with him at his home in Manhattan. Melvin is now 80 years old. He runs, what is it, 4 miles a day in Midtown Manhattan, right,
yeah,
Ty?
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing. And, yeah, in excellent health. And he is going to be coming on with us when we go back to New Jersey Performing Arts Center, because very shortly we are going to be talking also to Larry Goldman down there at New Jersey Performing Arts Center, because we want to make sure that the community always knows what's going on. But, Gus, you know, I have just happened to get this book from your library, and I want to tell people what it is. It looks like it has never been touched, but, of course, I know you have. The name of it is Split Image, African Americans in the Mass Media by Jeanette Dates and William Barlow. And this was written, I think, in 1990-something. I'm not sure I'm not sure. I'll check that. But anyway, really very interesting image. In talking to Melvin one day, lo and behold, I just happened to open the book, and what do I see? Some information about Melvin Van Peebles. And in this book, they were making the point that when Melvin started as the movement reached a crisis stage regarding African Americans, at the same time, Melvin Van Peebles, sometimes expatriate in Europe and a prospective filmmaker, continued to make a movie in France that he brought to the San Francisco Film Festival. So we're going to ask him about that. And as a French entry, because he was traveling in Europe for a long period of time, and Melvin Van Peebles proved to be the perfect catalyst that set in motion almost a decade worth of, as Variety magazine called, black exploitation movies. So it says, more than any other black figure in the movies, he carefully fabricated a personal legend as an urban outlaw. And that gave rise to the single forthcoming film at that time, which was Sweet Sweetback's Badass Soul. Now, he brought a whole different type of films, you know, by African-Americans, you know, to a filmmaking industry. And what he's doing now is absolutely fascinating, because Eusebio Washington introduced me to him in New York, and he now is turning his Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song film into an opera. And he has a band, and the band is jazz, kind of funky stuff. So it seems like to me like almost like a Little Orleans kind of, you know, one of those kind of honky-tonk beats. And really some good music, and we hope to hear him at some of the film festivals over here. But he has a very interesting story to tell. You know, he just didn't like the image that, or not the image of blacks, but the fact that there weren't any, you know, in a lot of the movies. So he sort of became a pain in a lot of people's sides rather. He sported a tattoo on his neck that said "cut on the dotted line," and he wore blue denim in the spirit of the movement at that time. But I'm not going to get ahead of myself, because I found this to be a fantastic read that I just happened to, you know, find today. What did you think of Melvin when we talked to him a couple weeks ago?
Well, I knew of him a long time before I met him, and I was very impressed with him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the few hours that I was able to spend with him recently, I'm really impressed.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be a really interesting interview. And then I have to say, too, that in a couple more weeks, we are going to be, I think it's called upgrading to video. Is that right, Todd?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason why we're going to do this, everyone, is because of the fact that Gus Henningberg and me and I and we, we have between of the two of us, I guess, over 45 years of experience in broadcast journalism. Is that about it? Yeah, lots. So I'm sorry that I'm reading something at the same time. We have only 18 minutes remaining. You mean to tell me we've been talking that long? Really? Good Lord. Okay. Yeah. I'm so involved with this conversation, you know, because when I talk to Gus, there's so many, you know, different things. But some of the films, I mean, some of the interviews that we have, you know, for instance, we have interviews with you and Bayard Rustin, George Foreman, who else?
Are you talking about interviews that were done on Positively Black?
Yeah.
We don't have enough time to start listing the hundreds of people, guests who we had. It was an unusual experience, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
But I will share this one experience. First of all, I was in my Newark office one night, working late. Phone rang, and I normally don't answer it at night unless I'm expecting a call. And I was, and I answered. It was not who I was expecting. It was somebody from NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Who I did not know. And we chatted, and I was a little impatient, and I'm saying, "Look, sir, I'm busy. What is it you want from me at 10 o'clock at night?" And he said, "How would you like to be on television?"
And you said?
And I said, it has never crossed my mind. Why do you ask?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we want you to come on a show that is on NBC called Positively Black.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's Gene Callender's show. Have you talked to him about this? And I said, no. He said, it's not his show, it's NBC's show. I said, look, in our community, that's Gene Callender's show. And if he wants me to join him, because that's what they were asking for, I'll be happy to talk to him and consider it. But that's how it all happened.
So in other words, and that's how you were hired on LIB, not LIB. I was on LIB. You were on NBC TV.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you quit. But we're going to talk about that later. I think we talked about that in the first show. We're going to get back to that, because what I want to do right now is just let people know the kinds of things that they can expect, you know, when we go to the vault. Now, going to the vault is everyone going to different shows that we have done. And we have a lot of footage. In fact, Gus, I was going through your shows and some of the things that you've done. And lo and behold, I remember because I was there when Nelson Mandela came into New York and all the fanfare, and you were there. I was on the radio at that time, so, you know, we weren't filming as such, but we were, you know, taping. Or no, we were live on the air. And all the ticker tape parade, you know, with the thousands of people, and then going into Harlem into 125th Street and Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard, and seeing Mandela go up to the platform, you know, and all of a sudden this light just was shining on him, and I thought it was spotlights or something, you know, that they were spotlights there. And I couldn't find them, and I asked Mark Ryan. I said, Mark, because we were both on LIB at that time, I said, where's that light coming from? And I couldn't figure it out, because the light shining right on Mandela as soon as he walked on the platform. There weren't any spotlights. It was the sun, you know, back by, what is it, what river is back there? Hudson? What's the river back there? The end of 125th Street. Anyway, West Side Highway, okay? All right, but to name some of these interviews that we have, you know, we have an interview that we did with Rosa Parks. Let me see, Dr. James Lee, who was the originator of brought arthroscopic surgery, you know, to New Jersey. And actually, what did he do? He invented a sneaker for his racehorses, right? We have to talk about that. By the way, everyone, if you know anything about WLIB, you might remember one of the first females on WLIB. Her name was Judy Simmons. Well, I have an interview that I did with Judy Simmons that is a video interview that I did with her when I was on Channel 47, Canal 47. And Judy and I are talking. You might be interested in that. Stay of stuff with Don Miller, artist from Montclair, New Jersey. Guess what? Run DMC, Rap Attack, Melly Mel, Magic, Houdini, et cetera, Grandmaster Flash. Do you know that Gus Henningberg interviewed all these people years ago? Because his son introduced them to him, and you didn't even know anything about it, right? You were way ahead of the game. What? Grandmaster Flash goes back to when?
70.
Early 80s. So you have this. I'm looking at this. Ecstasy. God. Wow. And then we have Reverend Calvin Butts and Wyatt T. Walker. Wyatt T. Reverend, the Right Reverend Dr. Wyatt T. Walker. I have footage of, I interviewed him, and he tells how he took the picture of Martin Luther King from inside the jail when they were arrested, all right, inside, because the picture was taken from the inside, and King was looking, you know, through the windows, through the bars, rather, and I asked Dr. Walker, I said, how in the world did you get that picture? And he told me that someone, I can't, you might say it on the air, someone gave him a camera that fit into his anal orifice. And he was able to take that picture. So the Reverend Dr. Wyatt Walker is the originator of that picture. So I've got some information that I'm quite sure that a lot of people don't have. I have it on tape. We now have 12 minutes remaining in our show, by the way. Among some of the other people that we talked to, well, loads and loads of things. But guess what? Here we go. Now, you know, my favorite people. I'm sorry, you're one of my favorite people. But my favorite African-American cultural anthropologist, Dr. Yosef Dr. Yosef Ben-Yekinen, Dr. John Eric Clark, Dr. Ivan Van Stedham, and Dr. Ledworth Gunther. I interviewed them all in one show, part one and part two, and I have it right here. And we're going to go into the vault when we have that so we can let people see, you know, their early conversations about where, from whence we came. They actually trace the Nile and trace history and go back to the early parts of San Genesis Lucy, I think it is. And somebody's going to call and say, well, you're pronouncing it wrong. Of course I am. So call and let me know. Let's see if we can get to Dr. Ben. I hope he's still around and well. I talked to him, I think, about a year ago when he wasn't so well. So we're going to check and see if we can get to him also. Ronald Brooks, that's an interesting story, right, Tony?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a fascinating story. People might remember that. And Reverend Al was very instrumental, you know, in helping me with that. Also, I'm talking to a Professor Brutus, who's at Temple University. I hope he's still there. He was a South African exile. He was in jail with Nelson Mandela around that time. And lots of other things. And I have to tell you this, too. The person that I'm looking for is a young lady who was at LIB when we were there. Her name was Nomaswasi Mokonani. Now, many people listening to this will probably remember that name. Nomaswasi Mokonani was a young African exile lady who happened to come to this country. I still don't know how she got here, but she did. She was helped by Percy Sutton. She had a son. His name was Ntatu Mokonani. And Swasi, as I called it, she was a good friend. I liked her. She passed away. And her son Ntatu is somewhere. So if anybody knows where Ntatu Mokonani is, he is from South Africa. His mother was an exile. And like to get in touch with him. Like to see how he's doing. So Mal Good and Anthony Payne and Paige and Sam Lacey, you interviewed them, I see here.
Correct.
And General Benjamin O. Davis Jr. How'd you do that?
Well, our next door neighbors, when we lived in at Tuskegee, were the Davis family, General Benjamin O. Davis Sr. and later in life, his son, General Benjamin O. Davis Jr.,
mm-hmm.
who was most known as the commander of Tuskegee Airmen over the years. And that relationship has lasted over all these years
mm-hmm.
With the Davis family. And I guess if we are lucky, we'll be able to get General Davis Jr. on the show.
There's another Jr., in other words?
No, just one.
Uh-huh. You're talking about the taped version, you know, because this is so long ago, right? Also, I want to mention this, too. Eric Payne. Eric Payne is in California, and he was in school days, so we have some footage with that. As a matter of fact, I was able to interview Eric and James Bond and Joa Lee. Where is Joa Lee, Ty? Where is Spike's sister? Put this out on the air also. So there's a lot of things going on, I tell you, you know. So, and we're ready to roll with these kind of things, so we have a lot to go on. But one thing I really wanted to talk about, too, before we go, is to pay tribute to a dear friend of mine who passed away in April, late April, and that was Janet Hicks from East Orange, taught at Columbia High School in South Orange, Maplewood School District. And she was a very special lady, an extraordinary lady, dear friend of mine for years. We used to dance together when I had the co-founded the Thompson Dance Studio with my sister in Newark. And when we went to see Alvin Ailey the other day, I think I told you that I remember seeing Alvin over 50 years ago, right?
Yes.
I'm not going to say that to too many people.
Well, you were about 18 at that time.
No, I was 10.
Well, I don't know. You brought this up.
I don't know. Anyway, it was a tremendous performance. And again, there's so many things going on downtown Newark. We're going to be finding out all of them. And hopefully we will start getting a whole lot of sponsors also, since we're going to be talking about all these things. We are also going to be letting people know about a lot of things that they had not heard before. Believe you me, we have inside word on inside track on some stories that you may not you may have wondered about and just didn't know about. Now we're coming up to about 6 minutes remaining. Do we have any calls, or shall I continue on? Okay. I also want to say hi out there in Florida. This is just to let people know how many people are listening. We have people in California. We have people in Bermuda. We have people in Florida. There's Rick G's Jazz Jam down there for you people down there in St. Petersburg. Rick is from East Orange, New Jersey. We have people in just about all over New York, New York State, et cetera, so many different states. In fact, when you come on an internet show, when you do an internet show, I mean, the world listens. Oh, my God, I have to be very, very careful. You know, that's really, when you think of it, you know, that can be overwhelming. You know, so you have to be so careful in what you're saying. I mean, I wasn't worried about what I was saying when I was on the radio either. And now that I'm older, I darn sure don't care. But anyway, I want to thank, by the way, we're going to be getting, your son, Gus Henningberg Jr. He is the producer, or I forget, I have it written down here somewhere. He's working with Nicki Minaj, is that the right name? And also Fabulous and Jaheim, by the way. And so we're going to have him, you know, tell us a few things about his experience with, you know, a lot of entertainers. And what else am I missing? There's so much interesting stuff going on. So we have just a few minutes more. The anniversary, I want to talk about Ellis Drury, his book on Benedict Arnold and Harvard University. So we'll talk about that later and give you a lot of information. And we're going to be on next week, next Wednesday. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be including video. A lot of interesting people. Can you name other people that we're going to go after, you think?
Well, I'm almost a spectator in this process.
That's not nice.
So I'm not yet up to date about who we are anticipating as guests.
Mm-hmm.
But I think between the people you know and that I know, that we'll have an interesting collection of folks for a long period of time. During the time I was on doing Positively Black on NBC, I got to know, that's where I first met Al Sharpton.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was 12 years old,
mm-hmm.
out picketing a major corporation. And I went out and introduced myself and invited him on. He was, I guess, 14 when he was a guest on Positively Black.
Wow.
But I did make enough mistakes in the course of the years on Positively Black. I was interviewing, and I'll just say one of them. I was interviewing the then mayor of New York.
Mm-hmm. Which mayor? Koch?
Yeah, Koch.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of the conversation, I was asking him about something about his background. And I asked him, and I got chastised about this on more than one occasion. I asked him about how he got into politics and how he got to be the mayor of New York, and offhandedly said, because when they were giving out good looks, Ed, you were out to lunch, and the producers of the show looked. Nonverbal communication, the
mm-hmm.
expression on their face was, he's crazy. He's talking to the mayor of New York. At which point, Ed Koch was hysterically laughing, and it left the NBC people. They didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But more about that on another time and another place.
Yeah, we have a lot more to talk about. We have to talk about the basketball event, Prudential Arena, and to a whole lot of people downtown Newark and East Orange, Montclair, South Jersey, all the counties, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, the park system in Essex County is absolutely fantastic. They have so many different things going on, brand new events. Everyone will make sure that they, you know, you keep up to date. Also, congratulations to Jeff Friedman over there at PBS. He's going to be doing Beethoven the Fifth this weekend, May 23rd, so you need to be aware of that. Also, congratulations to Wendy Williams. Wendy's on the cover of Essence magazine. would you believe that her mother and I went to school together? We're longtime friends. Can you imagine that? I hope her mother doesn't tell her age. But anyway, I'm Kay Thompson, and you are?
Gus Hamburg.
And, you know, we're back with the Kay and Gussa show. Also, just to say another thing, Black Wax Productions. Blackwax.com, is that it, that people can, you know, get to you?
BLACKWAXX.com.
So that's the deal.
Moving Images.
Moving Images.
Yeah.
And they do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, movies, documentaries, et cetera, et cetera. Nice talking to you, and we will join you again in 60 seconds. Shall we take this call? We were going to have, you know, Brianna Scott here talking about education, but she's due to go back to Bermuda tomorrow, so we will have her on probably next week also. Okay? And see you again next time, everyone. And then the countdown is 38 seconds. We're going to be giving you a closer look on so many different issues and so many different topics. And we have exciting conversations, and the people that we have lined up, you are absolutely going to be amazed. So you may want to, you know, stay tuned and put us down on your calendars for next week, Wednesday, 8 o'clock. We're going to be on for 1 hour for another couple of weeks, and then we're probably going to go to 2 hours, everyone. Anyway, it's been nice talking to you. I'm Kay Thompson with Gus Henningberg.
I'm Gus Henningberg. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Join us again.